I'd like to speak for a few moments. The spirit of love has been birthed in our heart. We can love Him, we can love ourselves, we can love others, because He first loved us. That's what John wrote in his first epistle, 4th chapter, 19th verse. He said that we can really love because He first loved us. What many times we forget is that the power of love is in us. The power to love is in us. The power that loves is within us. Christ within us, the hope of glory. We've learned to recognize Christ in one another. We've learned to recognize that Christ is in us. We've learned to see that Christ recognizes God as the Father. And although I won't go on with that particular part of it today, as we did last Sunday, I will go on with it during the week, if the Lord will allow. The part of Father. But today I'm interested in Christ within us loving. Because Christ is within us, His very nature will come through and surface through us. If we don't do things to stop it, it will just automatically flow through us. It's there. The power to love is there. We've even talked about Christ within us will forgive. Christ within us will forget. The power to forgive, the power to forget is in us. We don't have to seek its resources somewhere, go to a psychologist, find out how you do it. It's in us. That power of God resident within us, His Son resident within us, His Spirit resident within us. Christ in us, the hope of glory. Now, God doesn't just love us from heaven. That isn't the only place He loves us from. You know, sometimes we have services like today and we think, oh, how wonderful it is to be able to just come into that world where you feel so loved. Well, let me tell you something in case you think that when you leave the service you might lose it and never find it again. If you ever get in a pickle, if you ever get to where you need it and want it, let me tell you where it is. I've told you already. It's within you. Christ within you. I've said it on other occasions, but it will apply now for me to set this up for you to understand it. Christ within us must love. There's only one direction to love. It's outward. Love doesn't have an inward direction. It all flows out. But there's something about love, and that's that when that which has gone out returns to it, it makes it even greater. In fact, it makes everything work. You say, well, that's a little bit abstract. Well, maybe it is when we apply it to that which is spiritual, but if I gave you a little natural example, you'd certainly understand it. A power plant, an electrical plant that generates electricity, puts it out. All it does is just put it out. If you don't believe it, hang on to wire. You'll find just how much it will put out. It's there. It's alive. You may not see it. You may not recognize it. You can sit down and say, I don't believe this. But if someone just came around and put the little wire in your hand, I think it'd make a better believer of you. It generates. In fact, it's quite moving. But you know, there's something about the electricity, you know. It has to be grounded, and then it returns. And at the moment it's grounded, it will make anything work. If it's resisted, it will heat it up. It will liven it. It will lighten it. Anytime you let it flow back, it will illuminate any atmosphere it's in. It has to go out. But in order to make everything work, it must return. But love only goes out. It only emits. God is a spirit that gives, for God so loved that He gave. He not only gave out of His treasures and riches and glory, He not only gave of His inheritance that He had given angels and beings. He also gave us His Son, the greatest thing He could give us, because God that loves so gave. And God that so loves gives. Now, Christ within us, which is that God within us, must love. And when He does, He gives it out. He dishes it out. God within us will love. Christ within us must love. And you say, well, that sounds pretty unselfish. It is. But you know, we have a choice to whether we're going to light up a building with electricity or whether we're going to heat a building with electricity. We have a choice of what we're going to do with it. It just puts it out. And as I've told you before, but it's so important at this point, you know, if you turn that love that He's given out and you turn it inward like we did this morning, we turn it toward us, it's marvelous. It's wonderful. You feel the effects of it. It has a purging effect. It has a lightening effect. It's wonderful. You also grow by it. You mature in it. When love is turned inward, it's wonderful, but it can't always go out inward because that's all you have. There's another two directions that it can go. One, which we will not deal with today, but we will later, is the Father. Christ within us will always love the Father. When you turn that direction upward, it will love the Father. Now, it's like a valve. Christ will let us put a hand on the valve and turn it wherever we want, but there's no off on the valve. You can either turn it inward and get to where you're so stuffed with love you can't do anything with it anymore, or you can turn it upward and it becomes worship, which we'll deal with later, or you can turn it outward and that becomes the love that flows from our heart to our brother. Now, you can point it wherever you want to. It's ours. I think sometimes although He lets us put a hand on the handle and choose where we're going to direct it, I think He has a little bearing on whether we're a little bit stuck on one-sidedness. And He does have a way of convincing us that it is best not to always leave the valve stuck in one direction, that He just as soon let all of that flow in other directions. Now, we have that choice, I said, but God within us is that power plant. We cannot love on our own. Our own natures are very selfish. We were born, our old Adam nature was born to be very selfish, very inward, and the whole direction of the world is very inward. It's what you can get out of life. It's what you can get out of your job. It's not what you can do. It's not what flows out from people, because our nature, our Adamic nature is that way. Now, God knows He deals with this. He knows that that Adamic nature is still there. He knows that that selfish nature is still there. But there's another nature in us, a nature that wants to give, a nature that wants to flow, a nature that wants to change things, a nature of Christ that's within us that wants to love. Wasn't it wonderful when the choice was made and we directed it as showers of blessing upon ourselves, and Christ just moved upon us with wave after wave of His hope and faith and things that love makes so wonderful? But there's another direction that love must flow, and that's toward our brother. We say, well, did Christ want this? Well, let me put it this way. At one point in time, He said, all right. He said, if you can't keep the whole law, I'll tell you what the main essence of the law was. I'll get it down to one. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy mind, with all thy strength, and thy neighbor as thyself. If you can get it down to just that, you've got the whole thing, because on that depends the whole law. It hangs from it. Everything comes out from that. He said, everything comes out from that first one. So He said, if you can't get along with all the rest of them that came out from that one, just hang on to the first one. He said, then you got them all. Love the Lord thy God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul. And your neighbor outward as yourself, inward. There's the three. Now, he's demanding of us to love. Now, how would He ask you to do something that you can't do? God wouldn't ask me to do something that I can't do, would He? He's actually saying to me, I want you to flow because I'm in there to flow. You can let that love and turn it inward and it's for you, but you can turn it outward and it's for your brother, and it's a commandment. You must. He said, you must let it flow. And this morning at the beginning of the service, we had a good example of what it's like when it flows inward, so why deal on that? I think that we put the I think we put the valve in that position so often, I haven't even chosen in the series to go on that one. I think you know too much already. I know we've all found out how. But I'll tell you what we have a little bit difficulty doing, and the valve always sticks in this particular direction, because we don't have too much problem with the Father, especially when the Spirit's moving, it's flowing from our heart, and there's that worship, that praise, that song toward God that we'll learn later. But the biggest problem we've got, and the valve always sticks in that direction, is why we don't like to press it in that direction, and that's flowing outward with it. Going outward toward my brother. Now, the commandment of God is just as great to love my brother as it is to love my father, and it is to love myself. In fact, as great as it is for myself, it is to love another. He has commanded us to love one another. He has said you have to love one another. I cannot stop that flow of love. I must love my brother. And so he speaks on this. And in Mark chapter 12, verse 30, it says, "And thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind and with all thy strength. For this is the first commandment, and thy neighbor as thyself." Now, in verse 33, you must love him with all the heart and with all your understanding and with all your soul. For on this hang all the burnt offerings and the sacrifices. Now, that's what he meant for us to do, isn't it? Now, in 1 John 2:9, Let me just show you for a few moments what the Apostle John revealed to him by God, how he handled the issue of those that have the valve stuck so that it never loves in one another. And in his first epistle, the second chapter, the ninth verse, it said, "He that saith that he is in light and hateth his brother is in darkness until now." My. He that hateth his brother, although he says he's in light, is still in darkness. He that saith that he has light. That's quite a broad statement. If you think you've really got light, if you think you walk in the light, if you think you have the light of God, Jesus said, "I am the light of the world." If you have that light of the world in you, you cannot hate your brother. It's impossible. If you do, he's giving you a little bit of an idea about what's really happening inside. Now, he is truth. He would never lie to you. He'd never let you think one thing for another. If Christ is truly in you, you cannot hate your brother. And if you do, it's telling you something, that the light is not in you. And in verse 11 it says, "He that hateth his brother is in darkness still, and walketh in darkness, and knoweth not even whither he goeth, because that darkness has blinded his eyes." And in 1 Peter 2, verse 17, again he just tells us outright, love the brotherhood. Love them. Now that's a command. He's not saying you can if you will. He's saying do it because you can. Because Christ is in you, because love is in you, turn it toward your brother. Now we are commanded to do that. So even if you turn it upon yourself and turn it toward God, you might have a very wonderful religious life. But let me tell you something. You walk in darkness. He said Christ must love our brother. He said love the brotherhood. And then he asks us to fear God. And in the third chapter of 1 John, he says, "In this the children of God are manifest and the children of the devil. Whosoever doeth not righteousness is not of God, and neither he that loveth not his brother." Why do I say this? I know it's a wonderful way of ruining such a wonderful atmosphere this morning. But really, I wasn't concerned with this morning. I'm concerned with Monday through Wednesday. And let me tell you why I'm concerned with it. Because if you receive such a big dosis of it this morning, you've got more to give than you have for weeks. Now, what are you going to do with it? There is a commandment that seeing as though it has been given to you, give it to your brother. He's saying, show it to your brother. Do it out there in real life. Out there where everything happens every day, do it out there. We are commanded to leave this building and do it. You say, well, how can you do that? In what ways can we actually show that love to our brother? Well, for this is the message that ye have heard, verse 11, from the beginning, that ye should love one another. And in verse 14, we know that we have passed from death unto life because we love. How about that? Because we love the brethren. He that loveth not his brother abideth in death. Verse 15, whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. And you know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. My! How can such a wonderful atmosphere get so interrupted? Well, rather than being condemned by it, let it do something marvelous for you this morning. Seeing though so much of it was turned on you this morning, it's because you're capable of it. It's because death is not in you. It's because darkness is not there. So because it's not there, now go out and do it. So the first thing I want to establish to you is that you can. Because the first thing we do is, Lord, how? But really, that's a way of saying, I can't. So the first thing I want to get out of the way is that you can. He is in you. He is the one that will be doing it if you'll just open the door, open the valve, it will flow. What is that valve? It's in my will. It's a choice that I make. In any given circumstances of life, it's a choice that I make to give out of that which is in me to someone that is surrounding me. How does it work out in actual practice? Well, we'll take that. The next part of this message that I'll give on another day during the week, if the Lord permits, will be on the actual practical way how charity is God's way of letting His love flow through us right down to the nitty-gritty so that you cannot say, Lord, I didn't know how. He's going to tell you exactly how. And all you have to do is write it down, go out and do it. Now, any more, any simpler than that, I'm sorry, I give up. All I'm going to do today is establish the attitude in which you will be able to do it. I've already established that you can. Now I'm going to establish the attitude with which you'll do it. And then next time we're going to get into that third phase, and that's how you can actually do it. I hope you're ready for that. Now, what kind of atmosphere must this love toward my brother work in? What kind of an attitude do I have to really get in before it works? What's the actual thing that's going to take my arm over to that valve and want to even turn it toward my brother? It's certainly not going to be an atmosphere in which I'm looking at his faults. I want to tell you that right now. In fact, even husband and wives that have come into marriage with each other because of the tremendous love they feel for one another, if all they do is look at one another's fault, very shortly will that valve be shut off, even between two people that love each other. And any time you focus on people's faults, any time you're looking at what people do, you're sizing them up. You're saying, do they deserve to be loved or don't they? And if so, how much? Well, look, if you loved your own children by the amount that they give back to you or how they behave in life or how they obey you, I want to tell you something right now. It wouldn't be just a few children out there that would live without love. It would be everybody. The problem with those few children is that they had the wrong parents. But I want to tell you that there comes a moment in our life that there has to be a right atmosphere for the seed of love to grow in. Before you can know what you do, you have to know how you can do it. And you cannot do it without a right atmosphere, without a right attitude. Attitude is the inclination, it's the direction that you're going to fly in. Then you'll learn how to fly. Until you get and chart your course toward New York, forget trying to fly it. An attitude is the angle. An attitude is the focus. An attitude could be said is what every player has when they go out to a football field or a soccer field. They go out there and they know what side they're going to kick on. They also know after halftime it all gets turned around. Or they're going to go out there and they're going to have an attitude problem. in more ways than one. You see, we have to have the right atmosphere. Now, what is the right atmosphere? That's a good question. What is it? Mark 12, verse 31. For your sakes, I've chosen not to dwell on these first few verses that I've given you. I just hope they'd wake you up a little bit. He speaks about the second part of that great commandment to love the Lord. And he said, just namely, it's this. Thou shalt. You know, there's other places in the Bible where I've really rejoiced over this word. It's different than will. Will leaves a lot of room open as to whether it would happen or not. Shall is a declaration from God as how it's going to turn out. How's that? And every time I read a promise, if it's got shalt in there, I got it. And if it says will, I know it depends a lot on me. I know it's one of those conditional things, and I know how good I am. It just hardly ever works out. But when he says shalt, I know. Now, he's not telling you to do it. He's telling you it will happen. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God. He didn't say do it. He said you will be doing it. Because inevitably, the reign of Saul will weaken and the reign of David will become stronger until inevitably he will rule on the throne. Inevitably, Christ is going to rule on the throne of flesh. In the end, Christ will. His spirit of love will impregnate the world. The spirit of love will be the atmosphere that people will live in. And the spirit of love is that which will flow from one heart to another. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God. That happens to everyone who is born again. They will. They shall love the Lord their God. Slice the pie however you will. That's how it ends up. And I thank the Lord for the few peaks he gives me, few views he gives me into how things are going to turn out. You know, the devil's real good at that. He has more shells than anyone. All right, so you've done this. Fine, I know I have. And you've done that. I know that's right. And look what's happening around you. This circumstance, that one, I know that. All right, now this is how it's going to end up. Always so miserable. Always so black. Always in hell. He always wants it his way. But any time he associates everything that's true and then tags on how it's going to end, that's where you cut it off. Now, that's what he's telling us. We will love our brother. We shall. Thou shalt love thy brother. Now, in John chapter 15, verse 13, we're going to start on the atmosphere or attitude. Greater love hath no man than this. Greater love has no man than this. Here's the whole scenario. Here's the whole area. Here's the whole atmosphere in which the thing happens. Greater love hath. It's an acting love. It's not a love that he has put on a shelf. It's a love that's working. And this is the atmosphere in which it works. This is how you know it's actually happening. What is it? You say it. That a man lay down his life for his friends. Greater love hath no man. There's no possible love any greater than this. The atmosphere in which it's given, the whole thing in which it's done, is that he lays down his life. He lays down his life. Now, I talked about attitude. I talked about angles. That's the attitude of a servant. When you lay down your life, that's what a servant does. That's the attitude. You cannot love your brother unless your attitude is to be of service. Unless your attitude is, brother, what can I do? Not how, not when. We'll worry about that later. what can I do? I am willing to do something. I am willing to just come. What do you need? What would you like me to do? Not what can I get? It's a laying down of a life. It's a setting aside of a life for someone else's purpose besides your own. For someone else's welfare besides your own. Now that's the attitude. It's an attitude of laying down. It's not an attitude of picking up. It's not an attitude of taking. It's an attitude of laying. You can always come back to it. But you have to lay it down. You're going to have to lay down the check on the cash register of a bank. If you plan to get the money, you're going to have to lay down the check. You're going to have to put it there, take your hands off of it until someone else puts their hands on it. Then you can put your hands on what they laid down. It's there. But you've got to get rid of yours for them to give you theirs. It's an attitude that I can have. And even the world has picked up on this attitude, but I'm not talking about human compassions right now. I'm talking about God's love flowing through us. I mean, even President Kennedy says, it's not what the country can do for you. If that's going to be your attitude, you'll never have a great country, is what you can do for it. But I'm not talking about politics. I'm not talking about natural ambitions that one has to build themselves a big kingdom that, after all, it all returns back to me anyway, because it's my country I live in. I'm talking about the love of God that flows out and doesn't come back. You know, even money we give God, which is an act and hours of our work, which we have separated and worked for God. Because money represents your time, it represents your health, it represents you, it represents your efforts, it represents your works. You're saying, Lord, certain amount of my hours during my life, I'm going to dedicate to you, it's for you. But in a way, we get some of that back. If it's used for a building, at least you didn't have to stand under the rain when you came to church. You gave it to God, and most of it returned by way of, thank goodness, air conditioning and heating where you were sitting. But now when you take that money and give it to missions or give it to some other place where nothing comes back to you, now you've laid it down to never see any part of it again. Now God's love is that way. You give it out and you don't get any portion back. You don't do it so now you can gain a friend, because then you're getting a portion of it back. You don't do it so when you're in trouble, he will do it, because he has a tendency of getting real rich real quick and you just bail him out of a problem when he's down. And buddy, he's going to help you when you're down. Tell you what. Look, that's not the love we're talking about. It's a laying down of a life. It's putting down of a life. It's an attitude in life where you lay it down and say, Lord, you can do what you want to with this life, but I put it before my brethren. How can I help you? How can I be of help? One of God's greatest problems with his priests and with his servants, with the ministry, is that they didn't have that kind of an attitude when they came to dwell out. He said to Peter, Peter, do you love me? He said, all right, then manifest that by laying down your life and going out there and feeding my sheep. Now, he wouldn't have asked him to do it if he couldn't. He could, because Christ was in him. And he had to flow out. And all he had to do is find a way of doing it. But up to then, Peter was far more interested in being first in that crowd of apostles. He was far more interested in the fact that he had something over everybody else, and that no one had walked on the water yet. He had. I trust not only they, but everyone who reads the Bible knows it. But then God prepared something real nice for him through Christ. A cock that would crow early in the morning. And it was after that that he says, all right, Peter. He said, now that you're not after seeking your own position in this, now that you're not after seeking something that would return to you in the end, he said, are you willing now just to lay down your life? Are you willing to just put it down? Are you willing to serve your brother? Are you willing to just go out there and feed? And it's real tricky, but if you'll notice it, he always wanted to be first. So the first commission he gave him is to go and take care of the children, the little ones, the unimportant people. He said, I want you to be a total servant to the little tiny ones. See, if you can do that, that's fine. Then he said, I'll commission you over to the sheep. Now, that had to have eaten on him, because he always wanted to be the apostle to the mightiest, you know? And he told him, hey, look, start with small stuff, but just lay down your life. Do it. Now, it's strange, But Christ didn't say, all right, I want to love my brethren, so I want to do it through you. He said, if you want to show your love to me, then do this. And strange enough, believe it or not, it doesn't matter where you put the current or electricity into the ground, it's going to return back to where that's generated. Did you know that? It doesn't matter where in the world it is. It doesn't matter where on earth it is. It's going to find its way back until it meets the same place where it came out. And I don't care if you dish it out to your brother or not. Do you know where inevitably it's going to find its way back to? The source that gave it, Christ within you, God himself. It all goes back there. He said, look, you're going to be turning it to your brother, but in an essence, it's coming back to me. He said, if you want to love me the way I like to be loved, then turn this love towards your brethren. It's the quickest way to, even quicker than worship, even quicker than when you look up to heaven and say, God, I'm going to love you now and do whatever you want, and I want to please you, I want to keep your word, I want to keep your commandments. Even quicker than that, you want to find a shortcut? Love your brother. That's the quickest way to love God. Why? We established that the first time of the series, and that's because Christ is in your brother. Now look, when I get on to charity, I want you to be ready. And you may not want the chairs you're sitting on. When I get to that part of the message toward the end, I want you to just slip off your chair and sit on the floor and brace yourself for it. Because I want you to know what Christ will do to anyone who will not and refuses to when the end comes. It isn't too sweet. There's a price tag to it. Why? Because in the end, the only ones that will truly be his, as John says, are those that let that love show through in very practical ways to their brothers. What is the attitude? To lay your life down. Now look at the interesting words of Christ. In John chapter 10, verse 17, he says, therefore, what's the therefore? I know now. You can know, beyond any shadow of a doubt, he said, I know my Father loves me. Why? Because he'd been talking about laying down his life. That's why, therefore, the Father loves me. Therefore, the Father loves me. And then he just states it very clearly. Because I lay down my life. Now he can take it up again. But he laid down his life. In 1 John, the epistle, chapter 3, verse 16, hereby perceive we the love of God because he laid down his life for us. And we ought to lay down our lives for our brethren. How's that? Hereby perceive we the love of God. You know, that means to be conscious of. Just like you're conscious of his presence when he manifests it. When God manifests his love, if you're going to know it, if you're going to perceive it, if it's going to flow in you, it's because you're going to love your brother. It's because you're going to lay down your life. And he said, we ought to lay down our life. Paul, when he was writing the Romans, he said, really, this is our reasonable service that we just lay down our life. He wasn't talking about death. He wasn't saying, all right, Lord, I must die. Let's just get this whole thing over with. I'll help you. I was a suicide case anyway throughout life, so here it goes. Look, he didn't want your death. He wanted your life. He wanted it laid down. And now he's saying, if you want to lay it down before me, he said, don't come and say, all right, Lord, I'll go to any mission field you want to. Which mission field do you want me to go to? He said, I don't want you to go to mission field. He said, I put you in one. You're surrounded by one. He said, now I want to love through you to that mission field I've put you in Atlanta. Now, lay down your life. Let that be an attitude of laying down your life. Let there be the right attitude, and then love can flow. Now, I have a little example to finish with. Heard it on the radio the other day, and it was so fitting. Came about a week after I'd prepared this segment of the series, And it just came in great to understand, because sometimes we have little loopholes, little ways out. We say, well, Lord, you know, I don't understand. What's this business about laying down your life? I mean, how can you actually go about this? So let me tell you how it happened once in history, and maybe you might get the picture of what I mean when I say lay down my life. Let me tell you about Telemachus. He lived in Rome around the year 350 so. after Christ? He was one of the little guards way off in the areas of Italy. And he became a Christian. The Christian influences had reached his heart after the dispersion. And he was a very godly man. No one knew about him. He still kept his job as part of the guards. But one day when he was praying, he felt like God wanted him to go to Rome. And so he prayed and prayed, and the Lord said, I want you to witness for me in Rome. I want you to show my love to Rome. And he said, well, how can I show my love to Rome? I'm part of the guard. But he didn't ask any questions. He just obeyed. And they had several days' walk. It took him several days to get to Rome. And so he walked. And on his way, he just made sure that he'd heard from God, that the Lord had spoken to him, to give a witness. And it didn't matter what it took. It didn't matter if his life was on the line. I suppose he would argue in his heart. You know, Lord, one thing is to be a Christian and be hidden, and another thing is to go into Rome and declare it. And so, as he arrived in Rome, he noticed that a multitude of people were going down the streets. They were going somewhere, and he wondered where they were going. So he asked someone where they were going. They said to the Colosseum. It was the time of year where multitudes gathered to watch the gladiators fight to death. He said, well, this is strange. He said, well, the multitude's there. I don't know who else God wants me to speak to. He said, I'll go. And so he went and he sat in one of the bleachers. And out come the gladiators, down into the middle, bowed before one another, and went over to the palace where Caesar was, stood before him and bowed before Caesar before the fight was to start. And everybody began to murmur one and another, and they began to say, To the death, to the death, to the end, to the death. And that began to grip his heart. He said, you mean two guys are going to kill themselves here? Oh, yes. There was excitement and tension. And suddenly the Spirit of the Lord came over Telemachus. And the Lord said, witness for me in Rome. And he said, well, I don't know how. And the Spirit came over him with tremendous strength. And before he knew it, he had stood up. And he was running down the bleachers, screaming at the top of his lungs, in the name of Christ, stop! In the name of Christ, stop! He ran down into the arena area, stood before the gladiators and said, in Christ's name, please stop! There cannot be death with mortals. He gave a testimony. He witnessed for Christ before Caesar. And as he was testifying, one of the gladiators became most irritable. He couldn't take this little wimp over here doing his evangelizing while they were getting ready to be the big heroes of the show. Besides, every one of them confident that they would not be the one to die. And so he pulls out his sword, he unsheathes it. And in a moment of rage at this screaming idiot over by his side, he plunges the sword into his heart and mortally wounds him. And Telemachus falls to the ground, dying. And he continued to testify for Christ. And when people realized he was actually dying, it wasn't part of the show, because up till then they thought it was all part of the same package, it began to grip men's souls. And as he died, his voice got fainter and fainter. One man up in the bleachers got up and left. Behind him, another man got up and left. Behind him, another man got up and left. Women, children were getting up and leaving. At this detestable show of how humanity will kill someone so innocent. Maybe it was wrong after all. Their conscience began to get after them. They begin to realize that they had given themselves over to go and see a sport out of human beings killing each other. And as conviction gripped hold of the whole mass of humanity there, they begin to leave by the droves. And about half an hour later, the whole Colosseum was empty, save Caesar and the two gladiators. And it is the last recorded time in history, 392 A.D., the Colosseum was never used again from that day forward for any of the sporting of the killing of human life. Telemachus laid down his life for his friends. That's how it's done. Now, Christ may not ask you to do something that will actually take your life, but if it's laid down, who cares? It's an attitude. Lord, it doesn't matter what the cost is. It's an attitude of heart. Lord, I want to lay my life down. Not live it for myself. Not live it to myself. But lay it down. No greater love. Now I know the Father loves me because I lay down my life. You know when you're going to become conscious of God's love, and not just in a service when it's ministered to you by faith in ministry? You're going to come into the perception of it. You're going to come into the knowledge of it. You're going to come into the total life of it when you start laying down your life. When somehow Romans 12 gets into your being and you realize Christ is living in you, not only to live out through you, but if needs be, He'll quench out a life in history to birth forth a total change in history. Just a simple man out of the guards. He wasn't an apostle. One simple act of obedience. He saved the lives of gladiators. For years and years and years and years down the line, he laid down his life. Now, that's simple, isn't it? It was an attitude, Lord, what would you have me to do? Now, next time we'll get into the nitty-gritty of what you can do. This time I'm only interested in the attitude. You have received the love of God and been conscious of it this morning because the Spirit turned it in your direction. But the Lord is saying that's not the only direction that love can be turned in. If that love did something so wonderful for you this morning, think of what it will do for the world that's dying out there. Just think what that same love, when it's turned out to someone who's hopeless out there, can do. If God can only use your mouth, if He could only use your life, if you could only lay down your life to where He can live His life through you. We have a responsibility to the Father with His Son living within us. We cannot live to ourselves. It's impossible. We just cannot. God doesn't want it. He cannot live in a selfish being all locked up and in prison. He must burst the doors asunder. The gates must rupture. His Spirit must come through. He must love our brothers. He must love our friends. For God so loved not only His brethren, not only His chosen people, not only His religious crew, but He loved the world. He sent His Son to the world. Do you know the only real way Christ can show His love to them is through you, through me? We are the expression of God. God wants us to be so open in our life, so laid down, that whatever He would do, He would do. That doesn't mean you have to go out here. I told you that this had to do with an attitude. I'm not asking you to go to Rome and shout in the Colosseum. I'm not even asking you to go down to the train station and yell, or down to the bus station and do it. All I'm asking is that we become conscious of an attitude of heart. Christ within us loving our brother. Christ within us loving. And it can happen when the attitude of our heart is, Lord, I've laid it down. They love not their own lives unto death. That's how it can happen. That's the attitude that it can happen in. And that's what's going to set up the atmosphere in which we can learn how we can go out there and actually it take place. Because God says, all right, if I'm loving through you, it's going to show. It's going to show in the acts. It's going to show in the way you behave. It's going to show in the things you do. He didn't say greater love hath no man than this, and that's that they sit and pray all day, close up in a monastery, and worship all day. He said, no greater love hath any man than this, and that is why I know the Father loves me, because they will lay down their life, and I have chosen to lay down my life. And when the bitter moment came and he had to drink that cup, it wasn't any easier for him than it will be for us when God asks us to put our life on the line. When God is asking us that everything we live for and that represented what we wanted to live for be laid down, and the whole atmosphere of our life becomes, Lord, what can I do with this life for someone else, not what you can do for me. And unless that attitude is there, we will never love our brother. Forget learning what you can do, because what would make any difference about what you can do if there's not the right attitude in your heart? If the whole attitude isn't of a servant, if it isn't a life laid down, forget it, because there's no way you're going to do it. And that he laid down his life for his friends. Father, we thank you for Jesus Christ. We thank you for your Spirit. It is so lovely, Lord, when you move in faith and love to our hearts. But you are saying this morning, Lord, that there are a lot of people who live without that, and that you want us to begin to live a life that's going to change. Because your Spirit within us is going to change the way we live. You have come out of heaven. It is a time of visitation. It is a time of your Spirit moving upon the world, and there's going to be some changes taking place in our life. Lord, maybe we're asking, well, what's the difference between this and religious people that go out there evangelizing the world? You can do a lot of things without the right attitude. Father, we've been so guilty in that we're selfish. We've been so wrong in our whole attitude. Many times as we stood before you and we realized that we couldn't make it through in that service and someone else did, there's anger and frustration in our heart. There's not even joy that you did something for someone else. In fact, we're not even overjoyed at the people that your love flowed through that went to one and another just because they didn't come to me. Father, our attitude has been so wrong. So wrong. So wrong. But you will teach us of your ways, and we will walk in your paths. In every move of God throughout history, as the move progressed, people's lives, people's actions changed. He empowered them to do things that they wouldn't be able to do, God being so distant, his people being so far from him. We are living in a move of God. We are living where His Spirit moves and rules and reigns. But you know, the service isn't everything. Our lives out there are more important to God than what happens in a service. And to us, what happens in a service is far more important than what happens out there. That's what the Lord wants us to know. It's not half as important for him in a service, because there he only has us for a couple hours three times a week. The rest of the time is Christ living out through us in a prison, in a cell of darkness. Oh, let the light shine through. An attitude of a servant, an attitude that's so right. And then it doesn't matter what sets your hand to do, you can do it with all your might. Your attitude's right. Doesn't matter what task it is. Doesn't matter how, your whole idea, your whole concept is, Lord, I've laid down my life. It's yours. I've laid it down for my friends. I've laid it down for our brothers. I've laid it down for you. Then we will perceive the love of God. Then we will be conscious of the love of God. Would you let His Spirit speak to you? Would you not just be open to the wooing of His lovely love that energizes you with faith and hope again, but realize that it's our responsibility, as Christ is within us, to let Him live through us His love to others? That's what He wants. That wonderful agape love that was shed abroad in your hearts this morning, He is saying, let it flow through phileos. Let it flow to the world. Let it flow to your brother. Let it flow through your life. Do you find it in your heart this morning to choose life and not death? For he that loveth not his brother is in death. Have you wondered sometimes why that love hasn't been so gracious to your own heart? Why so much time goes by? In this we perceive the love of God, that we lay down our life. The whole attitude of life is, Lord, I want to be giving. I want to let you just give out through me. Lord, just let your word sink in deep into our heart. You will be the power within us to manifest this love. I think with the sequence of events, as they will come in the future, there'll be a need for this, as you will unite your body in love.